Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Phase Zero, episode 27 starts right now. This might be the biggest episode of our podcast so far. We have a huge, huge day today. We're going to run through what we're going to run through in a second. I'm your host, Brandon Davis, joined. Jenna Anderson is here.
Hey, everybody.
Aaron Perrine is in the virtual building.
I have a strange need for an apple right now.
I don't know if you're Kang the Conqueror or Carlito, man. So listen, now that's cool. So listen, we're going to talk full spoilers for Loki after we talk about some of the big MCU news of the week. And then after all that, we have a 30-minute deep dive with Black Widow writer Eric Pearson. Jenna and I talked with Eric. I promise you, this is an interview you're going to learn a lot of answers about Black Widow from, a lot about what went into the decisions for that movie, just questions lingering about what happens after the movie. We touched on some of that, and it's really a fun interview. Jenna was awesome in there with me, and I think that you're going to enjoy that. I hope you guys have fun listening to that. In the second half of the show, we're going to start with some MCU news. So first of all, Aaron and I have never met in person, right? Like we do this podcast together. We've worked together for a very long time now. We've never met in person, but right now I'm in LA. I just have to share this story with everybody because it's so unbelievable. I came out to LA to see Snake Eyes on Monday and to see the Suicide Squad later today. I don't know, but I said it. So it just so happened that after seeing Snake Eyes, one of my friends who works at Warner Brothers was like, "Hey, do you want to see Space Jam?" So I was like, I got nothing to do tonight. Of course I want to see Space Jam. It was pretty good, by the way. Great kids movie. If you're expecting like a Christopher Nolan film, shut up. You're wrong. It's not that. Like, it's a very simple, goofy, fun kids movie. LeBron makes fun of himself, and I loved that. But I opened my Twitter notifications, and I see Jenna tagging me. And she's like, "Aaron is there." And I click on Aaron's Twitter. This man dunking on the basketball court outside of Staples Center for Space Jam. Aaron, we didn't even run into each other at the Space Jam premiere.
I get out of my screening and I check my phone because I had been tweeting nonstop, y'all. If y'all follow me on Twitter, at Summer Lake Hornet, I had done all the stuff. I doing the pre-party, going to this screening. Yeah, Brandon was there. And I don't understand how we didn't see each other. Brandon was outside where I was, maybe probably what, 40, 50 feet away from me the entire time. Didn't even see him.
I saw LeBron. I saw War Machine. G-Eazy thought I worked there. He was like, "Hey, man, can I get in here?" I was like, "Bro, I don't work here. What the, like, what you, chill, bro. Like, if I shave my beard, I look better than you." What? So I saw everybody but Aaron, I swear.
I was walking into the screening with G-Eazy. And I still don't see Brandon. What is this?
Young Joe. We were too enamored by all the celebrities around us, seeing Chris Bosh wearing the Kobe jersey and stuff.
I saw John Legend, too, hanging out. Him.
I didn't see John Legend. What?
John Legend was outside in a turquoise suit. Ohio, stand up. I was so excited. It was
wow. I love y'all, like, flaunting your passes and bragging about all the people you saw. I'm like, the most exciting thing I did recently was, like, go to the mall. So I'm just, like, so jealous of you both.
Listen, first of all, thanks to Warner Brothers for having us. I was not planning. That was not part of my plans on this trip out here. I had two movies I was going to see, and it just so happened that somebody canceled and they had an extra ticket. So they were like, "Hey, you can take these seats." And I got to go, and I did not get to meet Aaron yet. So, Aaron, one of these days, we'll run into each other. Listen, we're here for Marvel. I know you're here for Marvel on Phase Zero. You want to talk more about Space Jam, we can do that on Twitter or on the site. First of all, Marvel news, before we get to the Loki spoilers, Emmy nomination domination. I mean, like, wow. A lot of nominations with not a lot of Oscar love for Marvel, but the Emmys... They're like, welcome to our award show. WandaVision got 23 Emmy nominations in itself, and I'm going to run through all of them really quickly here as fast as I can. Jenna, what do you think about this?
Just maybe cut out all the outstandings, because otherwise you're just going to like probably trip over your
words. That's actually a really good idea. There's 23 outstandings here, and I'm going to kill those. Okay, I'm going to preface this with every one of these categories starts with outstanding. Limited series, lead actress in a limited or anthology series or movie, lead actor in a limited or anthology series or movie, supporting actress in a limited anthology series or movie, original music and lyrics, production design for a narrative program, casting for a limited or anthology series or movie, fantasy/sci-fi costumes, directing for a limited or anthology series or movie, single camera picture editing for a limited or anthology series or movie, period and or character hairstyling, main title design, period and or character makeup, music composition for a limited or anthology series, movie, or something. Original main title theme sequence, music supervision, sound editing for a limited or anthology series, movie, or special, sound mixing for a limited or anthology series or movie, special visual effects in a season or a movie, writing for a limited or anthology series or movie. Wow, that's a lot of awards.
Also, like the writing category, they are half the category. Like three different episodes are nominated. That in and of itself feels insane. And then when you just add everything else on top of it, it's just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, Marvel's going to come home with some gold, I think, from that. And I'm just happy for Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany and Catherine Hahn specifically. But I mean, clearly these shows are more than just the actor who we get to see and celebrate. There's a lot of people behind the scenes, and it's not just Mac Chackman, who's been on the show, the director. It's not just Jack Schaefer, the writer. It's these costume designers. It's the writers. It's everything. And they're all getting recognized, and I'm happy to see that. And that's crazy. But the Don Cheadle one. Like, what happened there? Don Cheadle got nominated for Outstanding Guest Actor in a Drama Series for the 14 seconds he was in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Does this make any sense to you guys?
No, I think they just wanted Don Cheadle there. Like, I think they just want him at the party.
That does make sense. I'm going to be honest with you. Even Don Cheadle didn't understand this. He tweeted... sorry haters, thank you well wishers, and then like agreed with like that emoji where the arms are up. I don't know, like I agree with all of you. And he's just like, we keep moving forward, or whatever he said, something like that. I'm paraphrasing. That's a weird nomination, but I'm happy for him. He is the best part of Space Jam in my opinion, so
he is having way too much fun in that movie. Way too much fun. There's another part that got a huge rise. We can't talk about it. I don't want to ruin that for anybody. But yes, I don't know.
You talking about that one moment, little cameo,
that cameo. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know if that was going to work or not. And people in the comments are like, why are you guys still talking about this? I'm happy for Don, but it was totally random. Like it was completely and utterly random. I like Jenna's theory. Maybe he's just fun at the party. Maybe that's why they want him there.
I'll tell you, he is fun at parties. I can tell you a funny story about Don Cheadle at a party. At the Avengers Infinity War premiere, I brought my mom, and I turned my back on my mom for 1 second. And when I turned around, she was in Don Cheadle's ear. I think she was grabbing him by the wrist and was just telling him all the things he's done. He was so nice to her. He was so friendly. And if I was him and this strange woman came up to me and was just grabbing me by the wrist, and getting in my face and talking, I'd have been like, get your hands off of me. I don't know, especially now, but maybe in 2018 it was a little different. But Don, a very nice guy, so I'm happy for him. Loki will reportedly appear in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. THR didn't waste any time. They ran this report this morning. I feel like they must have already known that and they were just sitting on it. That seems like we're going to get into the Loki discussion in just a minute. Is anybody surprised by this news right now?
The way that they worded it in the article was almost like, do you definitively know, or are you just saying like fans hope that he's in Doctor Strange 2, which it's like, yeah, they've hoped that like since the movie was announced. So I'm kind of waiting for some sort of more official confirmation. I feel like after today's Loki, it is definitely a possibility. But honestly, I don't know. It was just worded so weirdly, like the way that they put it.
The two projects we don't know who the full breadth of the roster of who's going to be in it is going to be is Spider-Man and freaking Doctor Strange. We have no clue. You could tell me any tertiary. You could be like, Casey's in freaking Doctor Strange Multiverse Madness. I believe you immediately. It's crazy. So
we know even less about who's not in Spider-Man No Way Home. Everybody's in that damn movie. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. Those are the two movies that seem to be the biggest question marks, the best kept secrets, really. Well, not Spider-Man. Nothing's a secret, Spider-Man. But Doctor Strange, they have kept the secrets for Multiverse of Madness so well. I mean, like, not a single set photo. Nothing has come out from that movie. Did they even film it? Is that movie real?
There was that like one cornfield, like where it was like they're allegedly filming in a field somewhere. And I'm like, okay, we know nothing else outside of that.
Yeah, this is going to be an insane. I have theories about Thor and stuff that we're going to save for the Loki discussion. But the last piece of Marvel news that we're going to get to is Kevin Feige was asked by Rotten Tomatoes about Venom and Spider-Man, and he gave the most Kevin Feige answer he gives. You know, he loves to give a standard canned answer where he says a lot, but also says nothing. And he said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing again because I don't have the quote right in front of me, that he doesn't want to talk about anything that's not official or not definitely happening right now. But in 20 years of working at Marvel, he's not going to rule anything out. Like, he's not going to say it's impossible. So obviously it's happening. Mephisto confirmed. Right. I think it's going to happen. I think you'll get Tom Hardy and Tom Holland on the same set at some point if it hasn't already happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just feels like an inevitability at this point. Like, we've lived through too many years of just Kevin Feige acting weirdly when asked about this question. I still just love the one meme of like him just dying inside during the Homecoming junket. So it's like, it feels like it's a thing that inevitably we were always going to get to. And it almost makes me more excited to see, because Venom is so weird in and of itself. I'm like, how are you going to make this make sense with like little Tom Holland Spider-Man doing his thing over in the other corner?
Yes, I feel like Venom. Yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
There's just so much uncertainty around the whole thing, because after today, everything's on the table. Now, we're here now. I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know you could absolutely build a way for it to work.
It's also like that, last episode of Loki showed you what like the multiverse can do, how we can have these kind of fun offshoot stories or like Easter eggs and like details that aren't going to be meaningful to the main MCU canon aside from the characters that experience them in these alternate worlds. You can have the Thanos copter, you can have Throg, you can have a Yellow Jacket helmet. None of them, or maybe none of them, maybe all of them, or maybe just a couple of them will have an actual meaning to the stories we're going to experience. And even when they have those meetings, they're only going to impact the characters who experience them in that universe. And if they come back to the main MCU timeline, it doesn't impact the canon overall. And that opens the door for so many insane possibilities. And going forward, what a time. What a time. Now we can finally release the Spider-Man trailer, right?
Like,
we can get that. So anyway, I do want to say, listen, I see that we have great, great viewership today. Thank you all for joining Phase Zero. If you're new to the show, we do this every Wednesday. You can subscribe to us on any major podcast platform. You should follow the Twitch comicbook.com YouTube channel. And we will be doing this every Wednesday, even when there aren't new episodes. And I'm happy to announce right now, I am putting together, I don't have a date for this yet, but I'm putting together an episode that is going to involve some of you, our Phase Zero listeners and fans, the Marvel fans. And we're going to put together a trivia show against some of our celebrity guests who have been on the show. So we might have like Layla and Dottie against Cam Hayward and Johnny Gargano in some Marvel trivia. And I think that's going to be a really fun time. And I'm hoping we can get some of our listeners on the show. We could get a time where it works for several of our previous guests to come on here live and do a trivia show, and we can send Kevin Feige to make sure they're not cheating. We'll just get those Marvel snipers in the room. But yeah, I think that's going to be a super fun thing, and I'm really working hard to put that together and find a time to do it. And I'm hoping that next week we have Loki director Kate Herron on here. I'm definitely talking to Kate Herron this weekend. I'm hoping that we can get her live on the show. We're going to see if the schedule allows it, but if not, I'm hoping we can at least get like an extended interview like we have later today with Black Widow writer Eric Parison. So please subscribe to the show. Follow us. Follow all of us on Twitter so you can never miss it, because we have fun here and we love when you guys are a part of it. All right. Now we're going full spoilers for Loki, the moment you've all been waiting for. Loki season 1, episode 6 finale. The conversation starts now. Richard, hit us with the spoiler tag. There it is on the bottom of the screen. And we're going to get started. Starting with reactions, Jenna, you're at the top of the screen. You got to. That's the policy. I'm so sorry. But it's you
No, I loved this episode. Like, I understand why people were probably like a little like all over the place in their reactions to it. I think this is the first time outside of like Infinity War going into Endgame, this is the first time that we've had a story that is in the MCU, not counting like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the other TV shows, where it's genuinely just like incomplete. Like there's so much more that we can cover. And so I understand people being like, well, why doesn't this tie everything up as neatly as WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier did? But it didn't need to. And what it did give, I like leapt out of my chair multiple times. Like I was just so excited to see the big cameo that is in the episode. I felt so vindicated that he showed up. So I loved it. I thought it was just great.
Aaron, what'd you think?
So I guess we can stop with the they're not gonna debut any big parts of the MCU in these shows. I think they just broke their own rule. Like I think everything's on the table now. For those of you who don't know, like we're supposed to meet up before we start the podcast for about 30 minutes. Jenna and BD and Charlie and some other people are trying to find me because I watched the episode 3 times last night at 2 a.m.
Damn.
I just could not believe. I was sitting there. I'm like, wow, it really happened. It really, because every time we posted a theory about it, God bless Adam Barhart, writing these wild theories up about what was going to happen. People would be like, this is just like Mephisto. There's no way he's going to show up. And now look at you. I don't know how to act now. Like we everything is on the table. Everything could be as insane. I thought What If was going to be the strangest thing we would get till Spider-Man. And that's not even possibly true anymore. I'm looking at Eternals and Shang-Chi like anything could come through here now. I don't know what we could see, you know? So it's just fun. And it's probably the best ending of all of these shows so far, which makes it jump up in the power rankings quite a bit.
I fully agree with that. I just want to see a reaction video of Doctor Strange watching this episode the same way we just saw Deadpool and Korg watching Free Guy this week, which was an awesome video. I should have mentioned that at the top of the show. Deadpool and Korg Free Guy promo, genius marketing. Must be nice to own everything and be able to use some of the biggest characters in the world to promote a totally unrelated movie. But Doctor Strange must have been watching this like, son of a... I gotta go deal with this now. I thought this episode was fantastic. For me, Loki is my favorite show of the three so far. WandaVision is a close second. I just think Loki had the most interesting premiere and finale. The finale played like a TV show finale, whereas the other two played like a miniseries where they wrap themselves up, where we've been saying on this show for a while, there's going to be a season 2. And then they made it official. Like the Marvel Studios said it in that credits. So it felt to me like I was watching the first season of Lost come to an end. Like when you get into that hatch and the whole season built up to what's in the hatch, what's this island. And then it gives you the answer. They're getting into the hatch. And now we're like, well, I've answers to this. Now I have more questions because of the answers. And I thought it was really fulfilling that the purpose of Loki seemed to be Loki learning to accept himself, which the way that it did that was kind of like, I still think Loki and Sylvie's kind of weird, the like concept of falling in love with your physical self, like as an alternate self. But like, I understand the metaphor there and I'm okay with it. But really it was who's behind the TVA. And we found out, and it wasn't a Loki like I thought it was going to be, because I was kind of trying to limit my expectations based on the fact that Doctor Strange and Mephisto didn't show up, and I don't know, Steve Rogers wasn't in Falcon and Winter Soldier and all that. But those two shows contained themselves to themselves in a really fitting way that wrapped up their story. And WandaVision especially had such an emotional character-driven conclusion, whereas Loki answered its biggest question, showed that Loki in this like weird metaphorical way fell in love with himself, you know, accepted himself. Sylvie betrayed him in true Loki form. That's a Loki move. And Kang the Conqueror is introduced, or the Immortus version of him. it was just great. I loved it. Listen, I loved it. I thought it was great. It's my favorite of the shows so far. I'm sure some people in the comment section are telling me I'm stupid and wrong and WandaVision is superior. That's okay. You can have that opinion. I thought WandaVision was great too, but Loki just happened to be my favorite. All right. So now we're going to run through this episode in the details. Aaron, how do you rank the three shows?
Right now, I think I'm probably going to go, I really, really like WandaVision a lot because I love old TV. But so I'm still going to give a nod to Loki because I think it fulfills the promise of these shows the most. Like, because after the first two, everybody's like, nothing's going to happen in these shows. These are just vehicles to give people new costumes. I remember reading that somewhere and laughing very, very hard. God bless. Yes, Ian Grimm, aerospace engineers for everyone. Yes. And then WandaVision and then Falcon. And I love Sam. That's the I'm so sad they did my boy like this, where I was like, it was emotionally resonant, but also not as much stuff happened. It feels like the endings of the first of these, the middle two series, like kind of bridge the gap better than the one in the middle. So we'll see. But yeah, I got Loki, WandaVision, and then Falcon Winter Soldier.
Jenna, what's your rank?
I would say my ranking's about the same. Yeah, it's like I adored WandaVision. I always am going to. Like, I think what it set up and what it showed the MCU was capable of was like really necessary and just great. But at the same time, Loki has been the most creative just in terms of like just showcasing what the MCU can do, of bringing in characters and elements and things that nobody was expecting and that nobody was prepared to fall in love with Mobius and the TVA and all of just these like disparate comic elements. And so it's just so cool that we have this show. Like, I know Kevin Feige was at the Black Widow premiere and he was like, it's so weird that people are cosplaying as the TVA and that is just a thing that people want to do now. So I love the show because of what it showed the MCU can do in terms of storytelling. This felt like a comic book. Like, this felt like reading a random stretch of comics in the 70s and 80s. And like, I loved it so much for that.
It just delivered for me in every way. So now we're going to start the breakdown. We're going to talk about the Easter eggs, the theories, the questions, the meanings. This is full spoilers for Loki if you're listening live. So first of all, the episode starts with the Marvel Studios logo like nothing we've ever seen before. Well, we've seen, but haven't heard before. If you put the captions on, it'll do a really much better job of helping you see who's talking, but you get lines from all sorts of characters like Korg, Tony, Black Widow, Carol, Strange, Steve, Natasha, T'Challa. Like, I mean, there's Peter Quill, lots of lines of dialogue that we heard. And I think this is really just to show us this is our universe. Like, it's a reminder. It started with that Iron Man repulsor sound, which started this universe for us as the audience. And I think it's just like, this is our universe. It's not going to be only this universe going forward, but we want you to remember this is how it played out because it's about to be different. I dug that opening.
I did too. I thought it was such a creative thing. And then like, as it kept going, it injected like real world people. Like, here's Malala and like Greta Thunberg and just all of these other like actual quotes from our reality. So it was such a weird way to start the episode, but I loved it. Like, I thought it was just a very odd, cool thing to do.
I feel like it had like a little Mandela effect too, because I was sitting there, I'm like, has the fanfare and this thing always had stuff over it? And I'm just stupid. Like, what happened? And then as it went by, I'm like, no, this is special. And I'm like, oh man, I'm guessing that this is to establish like, oh, we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. Like, you know?
That song from Avengers Endgame was in there. There was a couple songs. I think there was a couple songs from Guardians of the Galaxy. Maybe, I'm not gonna lie. I was I played that back and I was like, am I gonna hear a line from like an alternate franchise? Like, am I gonna hear Hugh Jackman or Tobey Maguire? And I don't think they're in there. But I think that's the point, that this is,
I think, in like a week somebody's gonna isolate all of the audio and have it all figured out.
Yeah, new rock stars will get that done for us and break down every single line and how it ties to Mephisto and the moon and the stars. And shout out to Eric Voss for doing the Lord's work. All right. Miss Minutes is a scheming little son of a gun. Scared me the most I've been scared since Vision was dead in WandaVision, standing at the front door. That was terrifying. Tara Strong, you killed it as Miss Minutes. I hope we haven't heard the last of Miss Minutes. But
that was Five Nights at Freddy's jump scare.
Yes,
that was genuinely terrifying.
Yes. Hey, y'all! Oh.
Didn't check the cameras, Jenna.
Oh, damn. Oh, man. But that was Miss Minutes is certainly, do you think she's sentient, or do you think she's part of like a Doctor Who recorded DVD program thing where it's like, you know, she knows what's going to be asked of her and she's programmed to respond accordingly? Like, which
I feel like she's sentient, because like in the episode two, she was like, I'm a little bit of both. I'm a recording and I'm alive. So I think like Kang has the technology, especially with how far he is in the future. Like he has the ability to make a cartoon clock as like a sentient friend of his. Like that feels like something that the MCU could just very easily wave away if they really need to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Classic crazy guy alone on the moon behavior too. To create your own best friend, so you're not up there just talking to yourself the entire time.
Yep.
That was Kang's Wilson. So Miss Minutes introduces him, the man behind the TVA and all that, as He Who Remains. He Who Remains in comics is the last director of the TVA, very much his own character, completely separate from Kang the Conqueror. But this feels like it's going to be like one of those times where we're combining, you know, characters as just like, we're not going to get a He Who Remains story in the MCU. So why not just apply kind of the some elements of He Who Remains to Jonathan Majors is, I think this was Immortus. Like this was like a version of Immortus that kind of probably either inherited the timelines or created the time twisters or like got this opportunity to oversee it in exchange for immortality. Or maybe, like, I don't know, it's some version of that, right? Like, is this, no, this isn't...
I completely agree. Like, from the get-go, as soon as he showed up in that costume, I was like, okay, I think we're dealing with Immortus. I just don't think they wanted to put Jonathan Majors in old age makeup for the first time that we see him. So, like, and then later on in the episode, he says, I'm way older than I look. And so in my mind, it's like, yeah, you're just stuck basically in your own version of limbo. And that is, you're at the end of your journey, but there are so many other Kangs on the periphery that we're going to actually focus on going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also a thing of like being able to iron out some of the more like troublesome things for some viewers that might not pay as close attention as we probably do. Mm-hmm. Like if you have to explain that Immortus and Kang and, you know, all the other variants are like the same, and Gamma Tut are all like the same dude. If you can do that without giving them all those names, but then they just see Jonathan Majors and like, oh, that's the bad guy from Loki. Got it. You know, it's a way to like shortcut all that.
Yeah. And I love the fact that he never names himself. Like he just says like, I go by a lot of different names. And so it's like people, like I told my boyfriend, I was like, imagine if they hadn't already announced that Majors was going to play Kang and we just got this episode exactly as is. Like, I feel like the amount of speculation and the way that the fandom would have reacted would have been insane. Like is insane, but like just the little, like they call me a lot of names, including like a conqueror. Everyone would have just lost their minds. Like exactly. It's just so crazy.
Yeah. Man, that if it's just so hard, because just before the show, I was talking to you, Jenna, about how I want to announce a piece of news about a character who's going to appear in another movie. I'm not going to do it today, but it's just like I almost feel guilty about doing stuff like that, because it just kind of takes away some surprise. But like it's like if we didn't know that Jonathan Majors was going to be Kang in the MCU, this would have been just an insane moment where that door opens and you see him. We would have all been like, who's that? Who's that? Who's that? Whoa, 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 whoa. But when the door opened, we were all like, oh, it's Kang. Even though it's not like Kang and he doesn't name himself Kang or Immortus in this episode, we know this is a version of Kang Conqueror, which is still super
exciting. I love the fact that like, because when Majors was cast so early, it's like, okay, Ant-Man 3 didn't even really have a release date or a writer at that point, and we had Kang. And so I'm like, okay, you have to be debuting him somewhere else. Otherwise, there's no reason for you to have him exist in the MCU already. So I loved knowing that information, but then still feeling apprehensive of like, here's all of these Easter eggs for Kang. Like it still kept the surprise still there. It would have been so much weirder if we knew nothing, but I liked the amount that we did know.
Mm-hmm. A good pitcher doesn't just use the fastball all the time. They got curve, slider, screwball, all that stuff. And they've been working the rotation hardcore this year, because we all got pump faked into freaking Mephisto. And then everybody's like, so none of these things are going to have, if you see these Easter eggs, it's not necessarily confirmed they're going to be in there. And now we're not going to know where to go. We're not going to know what to do. I'm laughing because why did they announce Mahershala Ali so far ahead of Blade now? Am I going to have to pay attention to Jim Viscardi? I know you down there. Is he going to pop up in Moon Knight? And we're all going to lose our minds now? It can happen. It can happen.
I mean, this show, Loki name dropped vampires, and Tyrese was wrong. It ain't Morbius. So listen, that is a very interesting point about Mahershala, but it's also to play devil's advocate. Let me be Mephisto here for a second. They announced Brie Larson as Captain Marvel really far ahead, but I also feel like that was when Marvel had less of I mean, they certainly had plans, but I feel like right now the plans are much tighter and more sprawling and further out. Whereas she was announced in what, like 2014? Was that early or 2015?
I think, it was like 2015 or 16, I feel like.
Yeah, it was like three or 4 years before she was in her movie.
Yeah.
And Mahershala was announced in 2019. And if there were no delays, then it still would have been 3 or 4 years at least before a Blade movie. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's going to show up somewhere else. That would be pretty wild. In Moon Knight, that would be a sick debut. Imagine
they got us talking about it. It could happen. Like, but now I'm like, I would just accept. I'm walking in any of these. Like, they can just show up.
Anyone can just walk on
stage and be like, oh, yeah, what's up, Anthony Mackie? What's
going on? I was joking in our Slack earlier. I'm like, the 1990s Fantastic Four movie could be canon now. Like, the Arrested Development Fantastic Four musical could be canon now. Anything is possible in the multiverse.
Jennifer Garner's Elektra is coming. Yes. Let's go. Ben Affleck, Daredevil. Oh, let's go. Listen, if you show me Ben Affleck in a Daredevil costume, I will supremely lose it.
Him and Charlie Cox arguing against each other for 5 seconds in She-Hulk would literally break Twitter. It would literally end the whole thing.
Absolutely. And neither of them can even see that they're arguing with themselves. the idea of, oh man, like I know Charlie Cox and a lot of this is interesting because a lot of the Netflix people are coming back too. Charlie Cox isn't the only one. So it seems like they're just going to pick and choose what they like from that. Like they might not incorporate all the stories. Those might be alternate universe story. Actually, okay. So we're just going to go straight into this. The multiverse, that's my next talking point. The multiverse is busted wide open. Like, I personally want to see another universe. Like I want, like, and I feel like we have in the Netflix shows and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and that one show about people who aren't human that we don't name. And so like we've seen other universes already, even though I don't think when they were made, it was intended to be other universes. Like, I don't think Jeff Loeb was like, we're doing alternate universe Daredevil and Defenders. I think that it's just going to be the way Kevin Feige cherry picks the things that worked and leaves out the actors or storylines that he doesn't want to bring into the MCU. But also it's a way to bring back actors, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. Like, this is obviously the gateway to how you bring them into Spider-Man No Way Home, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense now in hindsight that we waited this long for the trailer. If like we actually needed the multiverse to bust open first before we could actually have the movie really deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
We already have some little seeds already dropped through too, because like in Venom and in Morbius, both the trailers for There Will Be Carnage and Morbius, they're reading versions of the freaking Daily Bugle from the Raimi universe. Mm-hmm. That could be the easiest way to get those things into the MCU proper as an alternate though. So they're like in a close enough universe to the Sam Raimi movies that we go, oh, look, it's J.K. Simmons, J. Jonah Jameson, and there's freaking Tobey Maguire swinging around, but it's not exactly the same, you know? So it allows you to tell those stories without getting everybody back, like Brandon's saying. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff. I wrote something last week where people said that What If looked like that MTV Spider-Man TV show that was on. And I'm like, y'all kid around, but like something like that could happen in Spider-Verse 2. You don't know. We live in the Wild West now. Nothing makes sense anymore.
Yo, you guys need to see this. Just now, while we're doing the show, the Spider-Man No Way Home Hot Toys dropped.
Oh, I think that was this morning. The black suit?
What? I just saw casually cosplaying his costume, and I went on Twitter to see it. I was too obsessed with Loki to notice. Look at this. First of all,
I know.
Look at that. Okay. Keep going. Look at that suit.
I know.
Oh,
his chest.
I know.
Yo, and that looks just like the multiverse kind of, or the like the universe thing that we just saw in Loki in the background. Wow. I can't believe that. How is this out before the trailer? Like, what in the, why? Come on, give us a trailer.
I don't know what they're waiting for now. Like, you might as well just ship that bad boy out this morning. And like, so just to, for the poor social media team for Spider-Man, I feel for them so bad. I used to do a job like that. And you get people tweeting you things like, you have the footage. It's like, they're just people who run the Twitter account. Please leave them alone. It's not their fault. Look at that.
Zoom is such a gorgeous looking figure. I mean, look, if you were, this is certainly making me come around to the new Spider-Man suits.
I'm just curious to see that in action. Like, we've seen it in so many toys, but like, I'm very curious to see how it actually moves. Yeah.
It looks really good in Hot Toys form. Well, there goes $300. Woof. That thing is gorgeous. Man. That thing is beautiful. I mean, I know a Spider-Man No Way Home trailer exists. I know it's out there. I don't know why it's not released yet. Maybe this was a thing where it was like, hey, let's just hold it till after Loki. But hopefully it comes out soon. Because I don't think we'll see Toby and Andrew in this first trailer. I'd be shocked if they don't save that reveal for later, closer to the movie or just in the movie. But are they variants? I mean, they're obviously some sort of variants of Spider-Man if they're in the movie, which they are. But so, like, do they? I don't know how to phrase this question. Like, their stories. Are we going to get their stories as they were seen in the movies before this, like Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, and The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2?
I think so, because it's like, otherwise that would feel unrewarding. Of like, oh, here's Toby playing a slightly different version of the Spider-Man that everybody loves. Like, I feel like people would come around to that, but that's not necessarily what people want. So I think it's just easier for general audiences just to say like, hey, remember those older Spider-Man movies? Those are technically canon now. And so everything you saw in that plays into this.
I hope so.
I would love if they got Benedict Cumberbatch. Hey, Jenna, can he sing?
I think so.
I think like he just hits up like, welcome to the multiverse. Take a look around. There's all these stories you've seen. There can be found. There's an old Spider-Man. Like, I would love that. And then we just get that out of the way for like 3 or 4 minutes and we're going. It's all canon. All the stories you've seen are existing. They still matter, you know, or whatever. But this is our Spider-Man because you know it's got to revolve around Tom. Like, my own personal theory about all the different suits is so that you can follow Tom during whatever action scenes are going to happen and differentiate him from Toby and Andrew. And Adam Barhart and Matt were like, ooh, interesting. But I'm like, it's obviously to sell toys too, but it can serve two purposes.
I will be honest. I do want like just a Tom Holland Spider-Man movie in New York. Like when Spider-Man No Way Home or Spider-Man Far From Home ended, it just seemed like we were finally about to get like a New York story, New York villains, Peter Parker in the city.
Nope.
And we're not getting that, but that doesn't mean I'm not excited for No Way Home and how big it's going to be. But I would really like to get that story eventually. It's just a question of like, how do you, when you're going as big as No Way Home seems to be going after Endgame, like after this multiverse story, how do you reel it in that much and tell a more intimate, smaller scale story and still satisfy? Because clearly, as we see with Loki every week, there's an expectations problem. WandaVision ran into it. Falcon and Winter Soldier ran into it. And Loki had to put Kang the Conqueror in the episode for people, probably myself included, to feel like they got what they were promised. And these promises are just made up for the most part. Unless somebody says there's a Luke Skywalker level cameo. And
yeah.
And then it's Ralph Boner.
I wonder if we're not going to get him in some sort of big New York City fight until they call back to the Battle of New York. If there's like a Battle of New York 2 and Peter has to like take a lot of charge of it because he knows the city better than most of them. But okay. I don't want to wait that long either, BD. I'm wondering what we're going to get because I understand I'm a little bit softer on Tom. Like, I think it's cool. A lot of the staff is like, yo, at some point he needs to be his own hero and not just do other stuff that the adults tell him to do. Mm-hmm. And maybe act 3 of this will introduce some of that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking maybe it could be a combination of both, where we do just pick up in, you know, where with Peter's identity being revealed. I mean, Charlie Cox is there. Maybe he is the lawyer who helps him. Like, and that maybe he's, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure that out, how that's all going to work. Or maybe it's just a multiverse thing. And through from the start of the film, mm-hmm. I genuinely just want a trailer to be able to form some sort of anything.
Can I ask you two something? Mm-hmm. Like, do you think we're going to get a lot more background of the universe, like multiverse cracking apart in these other two movies before we get to Spider-Man? Because I feel like it doesn't just go from 0 to 100, right? Or will it?
I could almost see Eternals acknowledging it in some capacity, but like, I think it would just be a casual mention and then we just get back to whatever the story is. Because like, since they see everything, it seems like something that they would be aware of. But I feel like if anything, we're going to get that in What If? Because it's like the way that they're approaching the Watcher and how he like observes everything seems like the way to kind of clue in a little bit more with where the multiverse is going. But yeah, outside of that, like, I don't see Shang-Chi dealing with the multiverse. Like, that doesn't really make sense. It feels like it would distract from the story, but who knows at this point.
I think Shang-Chi is going to take place during the blip.
Yeah.
And I think Eternals is set, like, I mean, over the past 3,000 years ago or whatever it is, and in the present day-ish. So I mean, I like Jenna said, I just don't see it going full on multiverse in either of those. But Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, and even Thor 4 could be super multiverse heavy. I mean, mm-hmm. Jane as Thor, maybe that's a multiverse story, and that's how that comes into play. All right. What If, you know, I don't think we need to spend too much time talking about What If just yet. August 11th will be here soon enough, but I do think maybe What If is going to be directly tied to this. It is kind of the animated version of the fallout of Loki. Maybe.
Yep. I was surprised because like I haven't been on since the What If trailer dropped, of like how connected a lot of the stories seem to be. Like, there are more characters interacting with each other than I expected, of like, oh, here's Doctor Strange and Peggy Carter talking to each other. And like, I feel like there's going to be more of a narrative across the episodes than I was expecting. I was expecting a very Twilight Zone, like standalone kind of thing. That could still end up being what it is, but like there was more crossover than I was anticipating. So that gives me hope, especially now that the multiverse is cracked open.
I feel like the What If trailer really is forming its own alternate universe Avengers.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's going to be T'Challa, Star-Lord, Gamora, Thanos. Who else was in that one shot in like the damaged Tokyo? There was Party Thor.
Yeah.
I think it looked like on the left side, it was like Killmonger's Panther suit, but I don't know if Killmonger's in that suit because Killmonger obviously is on a different path now. It's a bummer that Downey is not voicing Tony Stark. It is weird that like, I remember the four that I think there's more, but the four that I know from the report that are not a part of What If, the original cast are Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Benicio Del Toro, and Brie Larson. Mm-hmm. And like Brie Larson's the one that just really stands out because it's like, she's the one with a future in the MCU. Like, why did they get her to do it? One's so weird to me.
I know. But,
It's going to be weird hearing other people voice those characters. For all of them. But when you just think about the future of the MCU, it's like, well, I wonder why Brie didn't do this. That's kind of a bummer. But anyway, in the opening shot of Loki in that, like when we saw all the universes, there's a spaceship in there.
Huh.
Like, if you look really closely, there's like some sort of ship kind of flying away from the universe. And I'm curious, like maybe that's Kang running out before things get crazy. Maybe that's like an Ant-Man ship of sorts. It didn't look like a PIM design at all. But it certainly didn't look like Guardians of the Galaxy or anything. I don't know, Aaron, what do you think that was? Did you saw that?
I saw the ship and I, you know, you got freeze frames of it on Twitter. God bless all y'all trying to, you know, crack this code online. We all work better as a hive mind than we do as individuals. It didn't look, I mean, I have this book called The Wakanda Files, where it's like a back, you know, sort of history of the MCU and all the technology and stuff, and it looked like any ship in the Wakanda Files. I was confused. I'm like, I don't know what this thing is. I have no clue. I'm like, is that the ship that freaking Nat got into? Like, I'm confused. I don't know what's going on, you know? So it's very strange. That's not in there for no reason.
Yeah.
We all know that's in there for a reason. We just don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm seeing a lot of people in the comments say it might be the Fantastic Four ship.
It's obviously the aerospace engineer.
Of course, obviously. I didn't notice it at all, honestly, because like I woke up I held my phone, did not look at Twitter, just like sat down and pressed play on the episode. So I was like barely awake when it started. So I missed the ship completely. Like, I'm glad that you guys noticed it, because that totally missed my brain.
Yeah. What time, Aaron, you watched last night before bed?
Yeah. I fell asleep and then woke up and was like, oh no, I'm going to get up right now. I need to get up and like press play immediately, just sitting there in bed like, oh, that's why Miss Minutes jump scare screwed me up. You know, I'm trying not to wake up the rest of the house. And then I saw the ship and like, you can rewind a little bit, like 10 seconds or whatever, and got it. And I was like, what is, I don't know. Okay, let's just keep watching. Because I said I watched it 3 times afterwards. I was 2 more times after that, and I'm like, I still don't know what this is, but whatever. We're just gonna try.
All right, we have to wrap up our Loki conversation somewhat soon here, because we still have a 30-minute interview with Eric Pearson coming up. So the last couple of things I want to talk about on the Loki finale. And if you guys want to talk more, like, hit us up on Twitter. Our handles are right here on the screen. If you're listening in podcast form and you're running out of time because your morning commute is wrapping up, I'm at Brandon Davis BD. Jenna is at Hey, It's Jenna Lynn, and Aaron is at Summit Lake Hornets. So we can talk more on Twitter, and we can write the articles or make the videos or do surprise podcast bonus episodes if you have specific things you want to talk about. But really, I just want to talk about, is this, you know, the Secret Wars, you know, setup? Is this the Secret Wars saga for the next few years? Like, how long can this go? Will it be just Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness being kind of the, like, is that his... How Captain America Civil War was the Civil War of the MCU? Is Doctor Strange the Multiverse of Madness the Secret Wars? Or does it get bigger down the line? Do we have like a phase 4 culmination event? Or is it like phase 6 wraps up? What do you guys think?
I think we can get way bigger. Like, I feel like just introducing Kang and introducing the concept of there are so many different Kangs that can exist and are all going to be screwing up the timeline now. Like, I feel like there's a way to have that sort of multiversal story stretch for another decade if they really need to. And also, like, I do have to say, this makes Thanos look really lame now. Like, the amount that Kang is capable of, and the fact that Kang is like, do you want the Infinity Stones? I can give you the Infinity Stones. Like, the fact that we spent a decade, like, being afraid of Thanos, and then now Kang in, like, one episode is just owning him in so many ways, just is insane, and it's just so great to see.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. Like, in watching this episode, I sat here and thought, like, man, this dude is going to be a bigger, badder Thanos than Thanos ever was for like, in terms of a big, bad villain driving the entire saga. And it's going to be like terrifying how he is seated in. Mm-hmm. Like, they can make this last and plug him into Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania and Doctor Strange if they want to, and further beyond. We can see him pop up in forms that he doesn't have to be telling this story of who he is. He can just be infiltrating timelines and ruling timelines, and we, the audience, will be like, all these Kangs are the new Infinity Stones.
Yep.
And they're more powerful because there's so many. That's crazy.
The funniest part about that, BD, is you're like, well, are we going towards Secret Wars? And my question is, which one?
Yeah.
Which one?
Oh, it's got to be the Hickman. It's like, got to be Hickman.
Okay. Yes. All right. I was about to say, like, there's a bunch of these. That's the problem. I don't know what they're going to give and take from each one. I hope we get Battle World, like, Hickman style thing. It would be insane.
I hope so. Yeah.
I don't think we'll get like a Beyonder. Like, I don't think it's going to be a kind of like that cheesier. Like, I mean, the original Secret Wars is, you know, it's a great story in itself, but it obviously like is admittedly a gimmick to create toys. And it's just like, it's like a, I think the new Secret Wars is the biggest, the only way you can go bigger than Endgame.
Yeah.
You can bring in Hugh Jackman. You can bring in Downey. You can bring in Evans. You can bring in Halle Berry. You can bring in Ben Affleck. Like, you can do literally anything you want with any actor who has ever played these roles. You can recast every role. You can make John Krasinski Captain America as he almost once was, and then just send them back on their way and just make this epic story that will make sense if you tell it over time. You need time to tell this story. This is a big story. Man, the possibilities here are just endless. I am getting excited. I just want to see it all right now. This is about to be such an epic ride going forward. Holy, all these people, Marvel's done. Marvel is done after Endgame. LOL, psych. Yo, this shit is crazy. Oh my God. Okay. So Sylvie and Loki, we have to talk about that. I know everybody has an opinion on Sylvie and Loki. I always put this on you guys to start, so I'll go first here. I think it's kind of weird. Like, I think it fits. Like, I understand the metaphor of Loki falling in love with himself, and then it makes a lot of sense that Sylvie would betray him in the end there with that kiss and decide to kill Kang and send him packing. But it is kind of like, okay, I get it. I get where it's coming from. I don't hate it, but I also, like, it just is what it is. Like, I'm like, I don't know.
That's about where I'm at, because it's like, when, like, I know when we were talking about this a couple weeks ago and I was like, oh, I really hope they don't lean into the like self-obsessed aspect of it. I feel like we've met so many other Lokis at this point that I now don't feel as weird about the idea of the two of them having a connection. I like this scene better because Sylvie was really just using the kiss to get the tempad and have this ulterior motive and stuff. So that made me feel a little less odd about it, but yeah, I definitely agree. Like, it's a complicated thing in and of itself. I love what it represents, but it still is just kind of a weird, complicated thing.
It's a really good way to both have Sylvie be true to her journey, where she used the kiss as a means to complete her revenge arc, but it also shows that this Loki, who was pulled out of 2012, has really learned about acceptance and other people and himself. So I don't know. It's a weird way to go about it, but it makes sense for this, like, it metaphorically fulfills the story points, I think. Aaron?
I feel like it's a helpful device. And like, I think what Jenna said is really true. Like, you had so many variants running around by episode, what was that, 4 or 5, that it was like, okay, all right, we can get past some of the weirdness of this because one of them's an alligator. yeah, like, all right,
no, we should have been kissing the alligator. Why not? I think it's probably a really good kisser.
Hi, Croaky. I just, it also gives you a dynamic hook for season two, because not only is he going to have to figure out, well, what just changed, what's going on, what's the status, why doesn't my best friend remember me anymore, but we also got to go try and get Sylvie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know even if she's going to want him to go find her. So it's interesting. It really is.
Yeah. And we do have to talk about Ravonna.
Yes.
Jenna, what do you think about the Ravonna story being really an origin for her?
I found it really interesting. I'm still holding out that, like, there's a variant of her that is more comic accurate, where she's a space princess in the 30th century. Cause it's like, that was the one thing when it's like, oh, she's a high school principal. I was like, I like this, but like, obviously the multiverse was already a thing at that point in the episode. So I'm like, okay, the fact that she's not only a high school principal. So I hope we do get the kind of space princess origin for her, for a version of her at some point. But I love the fact that she is now going to go hunt Kang. Like, I think that's really cool, because it feels like a very truncated version of their dynamic in the comics, where she finds out that he betrayed her and she just kind of sets off on this path to get revenge on him. And it goes on for decades and she becomes Terminatrix and it's such a cool thing. So if we get any nuggets of that in season two, I'm going to be so happy, because that is very comic accurate in their own way.
Maybe Miss Minutes is actually good, and that whatever file she gave Ravonna was actually to put her on a path to betray Kang.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, but we end the show on the new TVA. Mobius has no idea who Loki was. That broke my heart, especially just for Loki, who just realized Mobius was his friend.
Who was crying in that scene really got to me. Like, when he's talking about Kang and he's like almost on the verge of tears, I was just like, good Lord. Like, that was just such a good performance.
Oh man. I'm just reading the comments,
and they are
calling me out, as they should be. Listen, we don't have whatever, it happens. Statue of Immortus at the end. I mean, listen, it's set up for season two. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a good way to wrap up our Loki conversation. Show was brilliant, start to finish. Some episodes were, I mean, there just wasn't an actually bad episode. Some were better than others, but none were bad. It was just a hell of a ride. 6 weeks of fun. And I'm happy with the show. I'm sad to see it go, but we're on to What If, we're on to Hawkeye, Miss Marvel, Eternal, Shang-Chi, Spider-Man No Way Home.
Mm-hmm.
What a time. That's also, still this year.
I know, it's so crazy. I will just say though, I do have a theory, and I want to put this out in the world before season two is even a thing. I still think, I'm like, maybe the Earth that Loki, or the part of the timeline that Loki is in, is the Earth where the Squadron Supreme are in charge. because that seems like something that there's still that theory. And I still want to believe that that theory is true. And I feel like if there's a way to bring them in, if you just say like, here's what's different about the universe. Mobius doesn't know who Loki is. He probably hates jet skis, and the Squadron Supreme are in charge instead of the Avengers. Like, that feels like such a cool way to start season two. So that's my hope.
Actually, your Squadron Supreme theories got me to buy a couple Squadron Supreme books. I have them here. I brought them on my flights, and I'm going to get myself ready for season two just in case they come in. This is the end of the three of us on the show, because right now it is about to be a live broadcast of our pre-taped interview with Black Widow writer Eric Pearson. Jenna and I got to sit down with Eric and take a really deep dive into Black Widow. So full spoilers for Black Widow are following, I promise. I'm really proud of this interview. I think you guys are going to learn something. You're going to get answers to a lot of the questions you've had. We're going to address some of the things that you really want addressed. I assure you, we weren't really shy about some of that stuff. So I hope you enjoy that. Aaron, anything you want to say here on our last Loki episode?
Oh, man, what a ride. I mean, I'm amped up for the rest of the year, because I didn't even realize until you said, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Hawkeye and Ms. Marvel, we don't even know when they're coming out. They could just be like, oh, August. See y'all then. Who knows? So... Ohio Stand Up. I saw you, Auntie, in the comment section. Shout out. And I am just amped. I'm excited to see what comes next, because we actually have a little bit of a framework now.
That's right. That's right. Jenna, anything you want to say for the end of our live portion of the show?
This has been just so amazing. I am so excited for Loki season two. And I'm so excited for everyone to see this Black Widow interview. Like you said, I'm super proud of it. Like, I think there's a lot in it that fans are really, really going to love. So I hope that they enjoy it.
Totally agree with you. And I want to just wrap this up by thanking both of you and Jamie, who's not here today, and Richard, who is behind the camera here pushing all the buttons. I saw he likes to do a little guitar session jam sometimes when we have our countdown going. So I want to give him a shout out for that. He's done a great job. And I mean, all of our listeners, like, you guys make this so much fun. Like, we chopping this show up with you guys for 6 weeks is an absolute blast. Thank you for doing this with us. It's not the end of the show. The show still goes on. But every time one of these chapters comes to a close, it's fun to look back on all the times we were wrong with our theories and all the times you guys played along and we had fun with it. So thank you, everybody, for supporting Phase Zero. Please follow the Twitch channel and enjoy our interview. 30 minutes with Black Widow writer Eric Pearson. Please leave your feedback in the comments. Send us your clips on Twitter, your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram and everything. And share our show with your friends, because we have some really big stuff and we're getting some of you guys involved moving forward, and it's going to be fun. We're going to take a quick break and then we're cutting straight to the interview. We'll be back live next week, hopefully, with Loki director Kate Herron. BD out of here. Jenna out of here. Aaron out of here.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome back to Phase Zero. BD here with my co-host Jenna Anderson. And right now we have a very special guest who's diving in to Black Widow with us, the writer, the man behind the curtain, Eric Pearson. Eric, thank you for joining us on Phase Zero.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, congratulations on Black Widow being a very big success so far. And I mean, I love the movie. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So listen, we're going to chop this up because we have a lot of questions. You've also written Thor Ragnarok. You've worked on a lot of the one shots. You also have you know, dabbled, I think, with Infinity War and Endgame. So you're a Marvel vet.
I was like writing support in that.
So, sure. Okay, so how does it feel to finally?
I got some stuff in there that I'm really proud of, I have to say.
Oh, well, I want to hear about that in a second. But how does it feel to finally have Black Widow out in the world after this long?
Surreal. It's just been so long. Like I'm always nervous sharing work. Nothing is ever complete. Nothing ever feels totally correct to me. So it's already nerve-wracking to share work. So then when you're starting to gear yourself up to share work and then the world shuts down for 17 months or whatever it's been now, and you forget that you made a movie and you forget when you made a movie, like it's very strange, but I've now been back to the movies 2 times. I went to see Quiet Place 2 on my own first and then saw Black Widow at our fan event, and I'm just so excited. I'm so happy that movies are back. And if anything, I'm really hoping that this movie brings people together again. Vaccinated, safe people who are being safe.
Fully agree with you on that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So as we established, you have worked on so many other Marvel projects. How would you say the work on Ragnarok and Infinity War and Endgame kind of influenced your work on Black Widow? Like, was there anything that kind of you took with you to this project?
If anything, probably just the comfort of knowing that I could kind of do this work, because the Natasha Romanoff story is so different than a Thor Odinson or an Avengers story. Like Ragnarok probably is the farthest on the other side of the spectrum, actually, of a Black Widow movie, as far as where it takes place and how many galaxies it spans and how many orgy spaceships it has. And so it was more just that, okay, this is I've kind of been in the trenches now. I know this is going to be very intense. It's also a very tricky kind of puzzle with where we know the main character is going to go. Just don't get overwhelmed and kind of know that all you can do is your best ideas and your best work of that day.
Yeah. I got to ask, are you the one who cut my boy Nova from that Infinity War opening?
Was that a thing?
Marcus and McFeely told me once upon a time that they had a version of Infinity War that instead of Hulk crashing into Earth, it was Nova. Because if you remember, Avengers vs. X-Men had that kind of start where Sam Alexander came in. And since Xandar was destroyed.
I didn't know. That must have been either before or discussed after. No, I never heard of the Nova version.
You're
of
off
it.
The hook.
I'm just annoyed that I'm just like, oh wow, look at this. You know, I was there for 6 months of pre-production. You do something that I don't know. How's that?
What was the scene you were talking about that you added in there?
Traveling time through Ant-Man's body. Somebody peed my pants. You know, Joe and Anthony Russo have a brutal system of pages where we'll just get around a table and everyone has to read. And we're not actors, you know, like Joe's an actor. He has some acting skill, but like everyone else here who's like, we're just cold reading these things. And it's so it kills my heart sometimes because it's so stressful to have that happen. That was the one thing when we were working through a pass that I'd done in the draft. I had the whole thing of we need a time travel goes wrong scene. And I wrote that and Joe couldn't get through it without laughing. And I was like, yes, I think I got one. I got one in for sure. And to somebody all the way to somebody peed my pants. I don't know if it was baby me or old me. And then Rudd adds in.
If you need somebody to fill in for you on the next table read, I got you. Okay.
you've got range.
I won't tell anybody what I hear. Okay. Or what I say.
You know what? If I have that power, I'll share it.
So one of the aspects of the movie that I love the most is the dynamic between Natasha and Yelena. I think it shines so much throughout the movie, but especially in that gas station sequence. I think the dynamic between the two of them is just so beautiful. What kind of influenced that big sister, little sister relationship and how you brought that to life in the script?
I don't know really where the influence came from, because I'm an only child. I don't have any brothers or sisters. I guess probably just from, you know, all just life. For me, it was also, we're trying to approach this movie from a very Natasha centric position. We wanted this to be her movie, her story, a study of who she is and where she came from and why she is the person she is today. And in investigating that, you realize that Natasha is a pretty closed off kind of person who by resetting her life after defecting from the Red Room has really made the, you know, let the world get to know her on her terms. So in thinking of this as Natasha's story, her emotional journey, it's like, well, we've got to knock down those walls. Who's the best person or people for that? It's got to be people from before her life who knew her in a way that she's trying to forget, who can affect her in a way that she doesn't want them to. And it just made sense immediately from the Yelena Belova character to be, and it also works for Yelena's character, Florence's character, of just, you know, she's badgering her and she's being really funny. But in all of those, I believe she's reaching out and being like, why didn't you bring me to hang out? Like, it's all coming from a kind of emotional place of like, I liked hanging out with you. Why didn't you like hanging out with me? It's one of those great kind of couple of scenes that does more than one thing. It gets laughs, but it also kind of, you see, you know, how these people feel about each other on a larger level.
Yeah. That dynamic was, they, the chemistry between the actresses too was so good.
Yeah. That's the other thing. I mean, I can't sit here and just claim that I invented this total magic. The fact that Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh are there and they get it. And once they're there with each other, their energy is so fun. Like, they really, you know, loved each other. They were having a lot of fun, even when they were, you know, even when they're shooting that big fight, the amount of times that you'd call cut and they would just burst into laughter and be having, so like, they were just having so much fun together. It really, you know, it shone from within.
Yeah. Red Guardian was a great addition to the MCU. David Harbour, speaking of great performances, embodied that role so well. Alexei's an idiot. Like, he's so, I mean, yeah. He's such an idiot. Like, he's almost delusional, I think, because of these Captain America stories, first of all. But I can't wait to see if those are going anywhere. But he also, like, he seems redeemable, maybe, because the movie starts with him doing something really terrible by handing these two little girls over to the Red Room. But it ends with him, you know, showing a human side. How do you tiptoe that line of making a character who can do something so bad, but also has like a redemptive quality and side to him?
Well, again, it helps to have David Harbour because he can do naughty things and still make you kind of laugh. He can do it in a way that's very charming. And I mean, it's funny, Alexei, on the surface, he is an idiot. He's also, but I think more accurately, he's a narcissist and he bet on the wrong horse. You know, like I love the humor as far as like stories you can only tell in Marvel, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You've got this, you pre-established is the amazing fairy tale of Steve Rogers, a scrawny guy who's just got such a big heart. All he wants to do is fight in the war so he can fight the bad guys, and he gets it. So then meanwhile, I'm just thinking like, okay, well, there's, and I'm sure they were thinking as well in the comics, like there's got to be an arms race, you know, a super soldier serum is an arms race. Just so happens that the Soviet Union gives it to a very self-assured kind of narcissistic guy who wants all the glory. And then I love just turning the irony of it, that this guy who wants to be a hero, wants to be great, he has to go undercover and pretend he's not strong. So like he's, I loved it. There's a kind of, you understand why he wants recognition. He was supposed to, he was sold a dream. And even though he's a narcissist, I don't know, I've got friends that are narcissists. And I think that ultimately I think one of the big kind of moments that's very, that gets you there, is when he pulls them together and says, everything worked out for you. And you know, you went on to topple regimes and ruin empires. You killed more people than ever. And you really believe, he's so proud of them. So, you know, that he's a good guy. He's, you maybe right. He is just an idiot. He just picked the wrong lane and doesn't really, and he can't see how much of a dope he is. But I mean, he also does the key. I don't know. I always try and find the emotional moment and then kind of ruin it. So what we also did was when he realized that he couldn't save them, or he thought he couldn't save them in the third act, he's there and he starts this big heartfelt confession to Natasha, who's actually Rachel Weisz, Melina. So he's bearing his soul. So you see that he's trying to do better. And then, oh wait, it's not her. And then he tries to talk to Natasha again. Wait, he doesn't have an earpiece. He's just trying. He's seeing, like, you want to have his redemptive arc, but it's almost more fun to never let him get all the way there. because I almost feel like the biggest moment of growth for him is at the very end when he doesn't talk. He chooses to, when she's like, do you got something to say? And he says, I just screwed up. You know, like, I think you know how I feel now. And him not talking about himself and how he feels about her and how he wants her to feel about him is almost a bigger gift.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Okay, so this next question is me just kind of trying to be a fly on the wall for you developing kind of Easter eggs and stuff and hearing about that, because it's not a coincidence that Yelena refers to him as Crimson Dynamo, and he arm wrestles a guy in prison named Ursa and then calls him the Big Bear. So, I mean, I would love to know, like, are those like significant? How do those come into play? Because they're obviously Winter Guard references, but we don't know if there's a Winter Guard yet.
We just do them as like Crimson Dynamo. I literally just threw in there as like it felt like the right thing because Yelena shit talks her family in a snarky kind of way. It felt on character for her the same way that she says, "Oh, if Dracov killed you," to Natasha, she said, "If Dracov killed you, one of the big ones would come get you." What do you mean the big ones? Implying that she's not a big Avenger, that she's not a God from space or a rage monster. Like, that's just needling. So when she's pissed at Alexei, she's going to needle him and call him by the wrong name intentionally. And so I just, for some reason, Crimson Dynamo was in my head. I knew it. I remembered it from a childhood. I didn't read any comics or do any research. I just threw it in there as dialogue. It was like, well, if someone has a problem with it at Marvel, they're going to let me know. And then everybody read it. No one had a problem. And then that draft just remained. No one had a problem. I was like, okay, there we go. Like, that one just made it through. Sometimes Marvel will come to you of like, ooh, we've got this thing. Here's a way to sneak this in. And it's, you know, not a mandate, but a suggestion that's 99% of the time correct. Like, you should just do it. It's a free win. But no, it was like, and also I think that's some of the kind of brilliance is that they're planting all these seeds, but they're not, you know, they're not watching. I'm going to mix some metaphors here. They're planting seeds, but they're not watching pots waiting for them to boil. They plant the seeds. And then if they're organically doing something else, they're like, oh, wait, would having Russian Bear be helpful for a streaming series 2 years from now? Or would, you know, the reveal that the Crimson Dynamo has been out there and wherever, would that be helpful in Avengers 8? Like, you know, it's there if you need it. And it's, I think you're in, as long as you're not actively disrupting something else that someone else is doing on somewhere else in the universe. It's just, you're, I feel like you get rewarded for adding to the playground.
Yeah. It seems that way often.
Yeah. Amazing. So the approach to Dracov in the movie is just so powerful and so interesting. I love the fact that he is just a genuinely misogynistic, just evil person, and that there is not necessarily room for redemption as the film goes on. What was the research process? Yeah. Yeah. So speaking to that aspect, what was it that you wanted to represent with his position, and how was that research process kind of like? Because I know myself and other women that I've talked to who have seen the movie are just so blown away by the way that the movie handles misogyny and the way that the power structure that women have to deal with is just kind of turned into the script for this movie.
Well, it was part a lot of discussion. I talked a lot with Kate Shortland and Scarlett and Kevin and Brian about what our intentions were with themes and all that. And Kate and Scarlett especially very, very like wanted this to be a clear message against, you know, against misogyny, against oppression, against controlling women's bodies, but also by just sheer logistics of the script that we don't get to, the script kind of had or the storyline had a bit of a getting the band back together vibe to it. So just by that, and also by the nature that Dracov is this secret enemy in the shadows, he can't really be on the field. Like he has to be hidden. So we don't really get to see him until the third act, besides a few kind of check-ins. So because we had limited time, it was like, all right, we got to go pedal to the metal with this guy. He's a piece of shit right out the gate. He's a cowardly man who has accumulated a lot of kind of superficial power, but is basically isolated in the dark, telling himself what a big man he is. One of the harder parts is that we have that sort of classic Natasha Romanoff four-dimensional chess reverse interrogation going. And shooting that was hard because it was hard for other people, and it made me remind them. They're like, we're going too rough. Like, we're hurting her too much. He's just kind of, and I was like, remember, she's in control here. Like, remember, the whole point of this thing is that she's working him, and we have to remember that. It was just hard to watch. It was hard to just remember, like, okay, yeah, this is Natasha's in control. It's her plan. She can take the punch. She can break her nose. That was like the ultimate comic book moment that I wanted, which is from, it's not Dracoff in the comics, but a different guy has the pheromone lock on her. And I remembered it from 10 years ago, that there's just a frame of her looking up with the blood in her teeth after having broken her nose. I can't smell you anymore. I that was one of my kind of hills to die on. I was like, we got to get this in. She's never looked cooler in the comics than when she's turning the, it also felt like one of those great kind of like professional wrestling, the fight's turning moments, like, oh my God, Hulk Hogan's hulking up again. Or like, wait, they were playing possum all along. It just felt like a really fun moment to, hopefully the audience is very uncomfortable with how terrible this guy has been. And you've gotten a sense of like, Jesus, like this guy has got to go. And then you want the kind of charge, like, get him. Like, that's the turn we really wanted there.
She was so,
I went a little off your question.
Oh, no, that was perfect.
That was a great answer. And it just made Natasha look so tough as nails. Like, it was great how she was totally in control. The Taskmaster reveal, it fulfills, you know, the Dracoff's daughter mystery, one of the big questions about, two of the big questions about Natasha's past, both Budapest and Dracoff's daughter. There's a similar,
are you saying Budapest now, are you?
What's that?
Are you saying Budapest now? Are you?
Listen, I've learned my lesson. I've been there, and when I was there, I said Budapest, and now I'm never saying that again.
I only say Budapest. I don't feel European enough to say it that other way. But there was, as you could tell from the movie, there was a lot of conversation on that set.
There is. I do feel like if I go up to my friends and I'm just like, it's Budapest, they're going to be like, what are you, some like uppity traveler? Like, you're just another American like the rest of us. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
But listen.
All right. Sorry to interrupt. You were saying.
But it's Budapest for me from now on. But so the reveal is that Taskmaster is not the Tony Masters character from comics, but Antonia Dracoff. And there's a similar reveal like that in the MCU in Iron Man 3, like a similar type of twist from the comics where the Mandarin is an actor. It's not the Mandarin from comics. That I remember when Iron Man 3 came out, some people loved it. Some people had like, there was some backlash from fans and some critics who were comic purists. And the Taskmaster conversation, a lot of people, I haven't really seen that yet. It's only been a day, but I haven't really seen people have an issue, but I would love to hear, like, did you have like,
I made the mistake of looking in direct message requests, and someone said, I don't mean to be out of line, but Taskmaster was the biggest betrayal of my life. And I was just like, I got mad for a second, and then I was like, well, you've had a pretty good life, Ben.
Yeah, no kidding.
The worst thing that's ever happened to you, then you should be psyched.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if someone in a movie wasn't who you wanted them to be.
Well, The Mandarin one was had such a strong reaction, apparently, that there was a one shot to remedy it. And now we're getting a Mandarin or a new version of the Mandarin with 10 rings in Shang-Chi. Did you guys have a conversation about making that change? Or was there ever like a comparison or a thought about those two, like, ever being an issue?
Well, there was no, I mean, it was more discussion of how do we make, because Taskmaster was going to be involved, and there was versions before I came that was Tony Masters, and it felt, I kept thinking, I was like, can this guy somehow not just be a goon? Like, I don't want, like, because Dracoff in the Red Room is the thing that's tied into Natasha personally in her past, of giant nefarious, that, as we learned, the spy station that is circling the globe in the atmosphere. So why is there this guy, like, why would this guy be an arm of them? That's what I kept trying to be like, what is, I looked very, very far for, like, how do we get this Tony Masters guy to believably be an agent of the Red Room? And then it just kind of leaned more towards other things were making sense. Other parts of the puzzle were adding up. Oh, they stole from Ohio, the cellular blueprint of the basal ganglia, the way to deconstruct free will. Okay, they've got the ability to rebuild the mind. Oh, Dracoff's daughter, Natasha used her as bait. blew her up. Well, what if she didn't survive? And this guy who has, you know, a lot of brain science, like, is that a good way to find these photographic reflexes? It just seemed to make more sense. And we kind of, I mean, that's the good thing is they really at Marvel, they kind of treat you for your story. Like, is this working for your story? And everyone kind of felt like it was. So we went with it. It felt like it made it more personal. And I mean, I hope that fans, like, I know that some won't, but it's also, again, like, I don't think they did that one shot to correct it. I think they just did that one shot for the Mandarin for fun. But, like, who knows? Maybe, like, now apparently there's the Ten Rings after all in Shang-Chi. I don't know.
For the record, I thought it was fine. I was cool with it. I was like, that's a nice twist on Natasha's life. I thought it was a cool, fulfilling plot point.
Yeah, I mean, some people, I don't know. I think some people want to be angry no matter what. And I just want to try and tell a story that makes emotional sense. So
that's fair.
Sometimes we both can't have our thing. Sometimes we both can't get what we want. And I'm very sorry they don't get what they want, but I think you did pretty good.
I agree. Yeah, completely. So there were rumors before the movie came out for a long while that we were going to see Tony Stark in some capacity, either in a scene that was like following the events of Civil War or that was a deleted scene. Was that ever part of the discussion? Or either way, do you know why those rumors kind of started?
You know what? And I feel bad to the person who asked me this the other day, and because I said there was never any discussion, but I do remember now that one version of the script prior to me literally had written into it the end moment of Civil War with Tony and Natasha of like, I'm not the one who has to watch about it, but it was old footage. It would have been, hey, audience, remember where we are. We're going to key off this moment of her. So it wouldn't have been Robert Downey, at least to the best of my knowledge. That's the only time I ever saw Tony Stark's name in, was just kind of a flag planted reminder of like, hey, we're right at the end of Civil War. But yeah, no, I remember when those rumors came out, I was in London in, you know, in our war room office. And I was like, I just looked around. I was like, am I supposed to be like, I have the script right here. Like, Tony Stark's not in it. Like, and everyone's like, no, did you see anything? No, we didn't. I don't know where it came from. Besides, unless somebody got a very old version where this kind of scene, which wasn't even a new scene. I don't know. I don't know where it came
from. That must happen on sets all the time because there's so much stuff that comes out. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's not. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, it's also like, there also might be, I don't know how people would find it, but there's a lot of material written sometimes, you know, like I had a Captain Marvel screenplay that I wrote in the Marvel Writers Program that is 100% different than the version that, you know, that came out. But I remember a few years ago, I found like a box of stuff and there was a couple of drafts of that. And I was like, I probably got to shred these, or like, is it okay? And I was thinking, what if someone found this? And you know, there's just a lot of stuff out there. Sometimes people might find the exact right page that didn't get shredded or fell out of a, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you right now, that fully would be on our website. Like, Thanos was in a version of Captain Marvel script. I promise you, we were writing that story if we find that page.
Yeah.
There was no Thanos. There was no, I'm trying to think of who the villain was. I mean, it was Supreme Intelligence in some sort, but.
Right.
No, it was completely 100% different. Yeah.
So going off of that and kind of the larger MCU, this movie is full of so many interesting kind of references to other films that you weren't necessarily involved in, of like the callback to Winter Soldier with the face changing technology. How deeply did you study the other MCU movies to kind of pull in all those references?
Embarrassingly, not very much at all, because I've just seen them a lot. Like, I kind of don't need to. And that's like how my brain works. Like, I'll forget someone who I've met five times, but I can remember, oh yeah, that's what you know, that's what Bucky said to Cap at that point, or that's what Lord Baelish said to Sansa Stark in that episode. My brain just like holds content more than it holds human interactions. So I don't know, I was like pretty good at remembering you know, what, like what had happened, what was going on. And if ever I was unsure, I was always, they were, you know, this was pre Disney Plus too. So they were always pretty good at getting me this movie to check out. So I could confirm whether or not I was right or wrong.
Now I want to ask about Mason, O.T. Fagbenley's character. This dude's connected, man. How much of a, how much of a story did you flesh out to make sure he fits in, and like, or have you like done any of that? And is that? Is-
yeah. Well, no, I, OT and I had a long talk about his backstory, which was like, not even so much like we were just kind of like writing the Mason backstory in our heads, just kind of like at a pub probably, or it was over the phone, but it was just talking of like, this is how I imagine them having met, and why, you know, he's kind of in her debts, and whatever kind of chemistry, how much has been actuated or not. Ultimately, like his character served the greatest purpose, not only just logistically as someone who can get her anything when she kind of, when she needs it in a tough point. But I think that moment of him was really important when she walks into the bedroom and he's so calm, he's just asleep. And there's something you're like, I would think as someone who's seen Natasha Romanoff in 8 movies, like, wait a minute, I know her. I don't know this guy. Who's this guy? Like, how is she so comfortable with this guy? How, it was kind of setting the audience up to, oh, you really don't know everything about her. She's got people that Cap doesn't know. She's got entire stories that, and, but yeah, I had a lot of, I probably have documents of it there, and I would love to see just the, you know, the how they met kind of story. But I'm a sucker. I'd see all those stories, you know. I really like the, I also just like the idea of the fixer. I always found like the in movies or in books or anything, the person who like mysteriously is the mysteriously anywhere and has the two different phones with everyone's number in it to get stuff. Like, it's just trades in favors. I always like that character.
So we got two last questions here for you. Jennifer, so, got one first.
So you mentioned that you would love to see just like so many other stories with Natasha's arc. Do you think that this is the end of the road for her solo stories, or do you think that there's more that can be explored?
I mean, I would have to, I know that there always can be more to be explored. I mean, there's plenty of comics, and there's, you know, so many different ideas that can be done, and but I do kind of think this is the end of the line. We talked about this as the farewell story. We, you know, that's how Scarlett, Kate, Kevin, and I, and Brian discussed it. They kept saying over and over again, this is our farewell. So I feel like I do think it is the end of the line. And then, you know, watch me be proven wrong in like a month. Like I don't know anything for sure, but the way we talked about, the way we approached this movie and all the way up to locking it in post was like, this is goodbye.
So, and my last thing, one of the things we talk about a lot of the fans talk about is the fact that Natasha never really got a funeral in Endgame, as she fell off Vormir, and then we moved so quickly back into the battle. She made that sacrifice, and then Tony got a whole funeral. And in this movie, the post-credits scene, we see a really touching sequence of a gravestone. And I don't know if you guys like flesh this out, but like, did somebody go get her off of Vormir? Like, is she like, please, I hope they didn't leave her there.
I don't know what happens to your body once you are the one who gets sacrificed or sacrifices yourself on. That's some kind of high mystical, yeah, you know, stuff going on there. I don't think anybody went and grabbed the corpse. I don't think so. How we saw it is, and I imagine in my mind, kind of monuments and memorials to Natasha Romanoff around the world. I think that her story came out in the kind of after the final battle and was like, hey, by the way, everyone, this pretty, you know, so everyone kind of did their own tribute. This one I felt was, this was an erected, a tombstone erected in Ohio where they were last had, that was done by Yelena, that was done by the family, as like, this is where we would lay her to rest. As a, just, you know, a private thing for them, which I thought was really touching. And then of course I wanted to make it obnoxious and funny with the arrival of Julie Louis-Dreyfus blowing her nose and being, cause we don't exactly say Ohio. We do say that she's allergic to the Midwest. And that was kind of that was our tip to it. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there has to be, or at least in my brain's version of the MCU, there are statues and plaques and stuff to Natasha Romanoff around the world, scholarships, everything.
Yeah, well, I love that. It was really like just seeing her tombstone made me emotional, and then seeing Yelena there whistling, like it felt like the closure we needed as Natasha fans. So thank you for that. Now tell us what happens in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and who
I don't know
what team Val is assembling, and everything that's coming up next, please.
I don't know. I actually don't know. I just I was talking to my producer Brian Chevick the other day, and was like, I really don't know. For the first time in a while, I really kind of don't know what's going on. And I was like, we're arranging a time where I'm forcing him to sit me down at some point and give me kind of some of the major points. Because, you know, since I was one of the first ones to get to see the Endgame and Infinity War scripts, I felt as cool and in the know as you possibly could.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And yeah. Well, yeah, you just walk a little taller. You kind of you feel just better. And you just knowing that it's just a great feeling. And now I have
you
none
feel that
of
little implant in your head buzzing. As soon as you start think about sharing a little too.
Good. They just remind you that they're there. Yeah. So, I don't know what's going on. I would love to be able to share it all, but I actually don't know.
Well, listen, you've put out two bangers already. I'm a big fan of your work, and it's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you, man. Thank you. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Brendan, Jenna. It was nice to talk to you guys. I love people who, you know, pay that close attention. That's what my brain remembers too.
We appreciate you paying attention to the details the way you do as well. I think we're part of the extended Marvel family. We're certainly not immediate family, but we'll be the step cousins who are the MCU customer support.
Absolutely. Hey, everyone's welcome at the barbecue.
Eric, thank you. I'll let you go, man. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you soon.